Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Thanks so much for joining us. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We also are rebroadcast on atozena.fm from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific time Sundays. And we archive this program at richarddugan.com, the radio show page. And each interview that you hear on a Saturday afternoon or Sunday afternoon is at the top of the archive page, usually by late Saturday or early Sunday. I am my own webmaster, so I'm the one who's in charge of taking care of all that business. It's great to have you with us. We always like to have you check out our guests, go to their websites and see what they have to offer you. Take what you need and leave the rest is what I like to say. It is a smorgasbord. We don't want you to fill up your plate with things that you don't want. And we also encourage you not to overload your plate. Take it a little at a time. It's not going anywhere. And it's always fresh. So there you go. Very nice to have a beautiful Saturday here on the Central Coast. It's gorgeous out right now. It's like, I don't know, it's got to be in the upper 60s in the shade. It's just great. Nice breeze blowing. Marine layer is starting to develop, which I personally enjoy. I know a lot of folks would rather not have that, but it just means that if there's moisture in the air, it keeps the fire danger down as well. And we can use that in a lot of places across the Southwest these days. So this program is designed to bring you new paradigms for a new world and giving you choices and knowledge of those choices. Have you ever gone to work and you've worked there for maybe a number of years if you've stayed at any place for any length of time? And sometimes you don't have to work just a couple of months and people come into the workplace and you may even be one of them and it's okay. And you start talking about the problems that you're having outside of work. I'm not even going to go through a laundry list of what those might be. We all know. We've all heard it. We all have coworkers. And it's and we're going to get a good definition from our guest on this, too, because I am lucky that I have an opportunity to decompress, even at work, with a coworker. He's actually a supervisor in many ways and a friend. But we don't complain so much as it's like we both know we're just letting it out. We're decompressing. We're venting it so that we don't carry it around. And we kind of joke about it sometimes throughout the day. You know, oh, I see you're still dealing with that issue, aren't you? You know, and it's all in fun and it works really well. And we have a small staff. But there are places where there are a lot of people that are doing they're working with a lot of other folks, and that's all you hear is the moaning and groaning and complaining about what ails them, what's wrong with them, what's wrong with somebody else. And sometimes it can even be with who's in the workplace as well, the conditions and so forth. We're going to talk about that. I will tell you that one of the best pieces of advice that I was ever given, Sylvia LaFaire, when I got into broadcasting was that when you enter the front door of the radio station, leave all of your problems outside the door. And when you enter the control room and close that door, you leave all of the problems of the radio station outside that door so that you are not affected by. First of all, welcome to the program. And second of all, that's not an easy thing to do.
Well, thank you. And it's not only not easy, I think it's impossible. So there you go.
Oh, well, then I guess don't bring it to work isn't really going to help us a lot, is it? Because we bring it to work regardless.
We do.
I like that response. So first of all, you are, I want to let our listeners know about your website, which is very easy to remember, sylvialafaire.com. Very easy website to remember. You have a book, which I just mentioned, which is Don't Bring It to Work. Don't Bring It to Work. And it's really focusing around what we're talking about here, and that is that we're going to bring it to work. It's just, so to speak, one of the laws of human nature that we just do. So that's really the first step, is we just have to accept that that's what's going to happen.
Well, I think the key here is knowing that there's a myth we've been living with, and that's that we're supposed to be different at work than we are outside of work and at home, and we're supposed to put on different hats. And the truth is, inside, we're the same person, so we have to align around that. So when I say don't bring it to work, It's about the subtitle, which is Breaking the Family Patterns That Limit Success.
Always,
so that's kind of intriguing, huh?
It always comes back to the family, huh?
Well,
Mom, Dad, and the siblings.
Listen, it was our original organization.
Well, that's true.
And that's where we learned about fairness and favoritism and backbiting and betrayal.
Ooh.
And we learned about, you know, what really works and what doesn't work. And we all develop patterns of behavior to stay safe in that original organization. And that's what we bring into the workplace. Now, we can. The good news is we can change it. First thing is we have to be aware of it.
But, Sylvia, I don't want to go back there. I just want this fixed so I can go forward.
Great. You know?
Good luck with that is what you're saying.
Well, what I'm saying is you ever get stuck in a tight parking space? At least nowadays maybe we can move horizontally, but in the old days you had to move vertically, right?
Yes.
And sometimes the only way out of a tight parking space is to go back before you go forward.
Multiple times in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, now you are of the Creative Energy Options Elevating Leadership Skills.
Right.
And this is kind of where you're coming from when we start talking about the book, Don't Bring It to Work. Let's talk a little bit about this whole family dynamic, which, as you say, is the first or original organization that we were a part of. I was a part of a pretty good size organization, two older sisters, two younger sisters, and a younger brother, and, of course, then my parents. Now, I'm not sure who the CEO was. Usually it's the mother, the woman in the household. But sometimes I wonder if the CEO wasn't all five of the females.
Well, that's an interesting thought. But, you know, here's the idea that I think we really need to look at. And that is, when we were kids, we were hardwired with behaviors. And they were there to keep us secure, survive, safe. And when we go into the workplace, and I think if you can look at it this way, it gives a kind of view of where we're headed. You know, we have created work to be like a family. We didn't consciously do it, but think about it this way. We have bosses, i.e. parents. We have coworkers, kind of like siblings. We get salaries, sort of like an allowance. And we even have performance improvement plans that are sort of like timeouts. So, you see the similarity, Richard?
I had honestly never looked. Now, I've never looked at it that way before. And yet, at the same time, I have experienced that family atmosphere. I can give you two jobs specifically that were back to back. One of them was the worst, most hostile environment I'd ever worked in my life, where the man who hired me, when he hired me, it was like I was his best friend. And within 1 month, and I was there for nine, within 1 month, he turned on me as if I had killed his best friend. And I wasn't going to give him the satisfaction of me quitting. He had to fire me, which is what they did. They laid me off. Uh-huh. But the next job that I went to, it was as if I had gone home to the Waltons. And they opened with open arms. They embraced me and brought me into the fold. And things happened, and I made the cut, and I got to stay, and I got to stay. And I ran it all, and on and on and on. And it was the best place that I had worked. Up to that point, it was the best place. So from that comparison to family, yes, I went from a really bad, I felt like a foster child, if you think about it, from a bad family to an incredibly nurturing, supportive family.
Well, you were pretty lucky. That doesn't happen that frequently. But let me tell you how I got into this, my big aha time, my story, which is kind of interesting.
Yes, please.
It's on two levels. The first one is I grew up in a family where there was a family business. My father and his two brothers were in business together, and as I look back, it was fiscally sound but emotionally bankrupt because my father and his brothers used to fight all the time. And he would come home from work, and I'd hear him frustrated talking to my mother about what was going on. So for me, the world of business did not look particularly appealing. So I had no interest in business. I have an older brother, and he heard my father complaining. He looked around. He said, thank you very much. I'll be a doctor. So he became a physician. And as the story goes, as we were growing up, you know, I was a girl in those days. You could be a teacher, a nurse. You know, the options weren't as wide as they are now.
Right.
And one day, my father came home, and he said to my mother, I'm done. And we didn't know how prophetic that was. And they went out to dinner and came home, and in the middle of the night, he had a massive heart attack and died. So he was really done. I was 14 years old. So I looked at this and said, what was all that fighting about? As I got a little older, I looked back on it, and I ended up becoming a family therapist because I wanted to find out why in his family in particular, not as much in my mother's, but in my father's, there was all this dissension and competition with the three brothers. So I became a family therapist and learned a lot about the dynamics in families. Now, here's where the aha came. So we had a fairly large personal growth center in suburban Philadelphia, and one evening there was a group of parents who had come in, and we were talking about adolescence. The room was packed, and people were, you know, telling their stories about their kids. And at the end, a man walked up to me, and he said, will you come work with my senior leadership team? And I said, why? And he said, they're fighting. And I said, so what? And he said, but Sylvia, you work with people who have to get along, families. They have to get along. And that's where I started on a bridge that I crossed. I went in out of curiosity to work with the team, using what I knew about how to get families to behave more effectively, and it really made a difference. And from there, I just changed, never came back, changed into working with business and leadership, and it was kind of like I found the formula. Wished my father and his brothers had had that way back when, but have helped many other family businesses and generic businesses do better, and then people take the stuff home. So that was my aha. That's the base of my story.
And so this concept of the family dynamic overlaid over the workplace was just a natural for you?
Well, it took some time.
Yeah.
You know, in the beginning, I was using what I knew from my family studies, and I was kind of going by the seat of my pants. But after a while, I thought, wow, it's the same patterns, the same behaviors. The super achiever kid who is the me guy or gal is the same super achiever person in the workplace, the me guy or gal who has to be first, best, and better than everybody else and really gets annoying. Did it in the family with siblings? Does it at work? So I started saying, it's the same. And the victim, the kid at home who was the one who said, I guess it's always my fault, I'd begin to see that in the workplace, the person who would say, I guess it's always my fault. So little by little, I began to ask people quietly on the side to tell me stories about what it was like growing up, and I just started connecting the dots. So it's pretty original research, and I haven't seen, I love to read and study, so I've looked, and I don't know anybody else who's doing exactly the kind of work that we're doing at Creative Energy Options, which is CEO for short. How brilliant is that? And we go into family businesses. We work with large corporations. We work with entrepreneurs and startup companies. It's basically all the same.
And this to me is fascinating because I'm sitting here as you're sharing this, and I'm sitting here looking back at the dynamics in my family and my workplace that I've gone through, the workplaces that I've gone through, and even to this day, and how similar they are. And it seems as though the last 2, maybe 3 jobs, this doesn't include the horrific one I shared with you, the last 2 or 3 jobs that I've had have actually been the better part of that dynamic. Because I have to say that my family dynamic wasn't terrible. You know, it wasn't anything of that nature. But it had its moments when I wished that I wasn't there. So I wasn't. I would take off on my bike, and I was a paper boy, and I was out there collecting or trying to get subscriptions or just bicycling around. And I kind of separated myself from that dynamic.
So you, in a way, you were kind of an avoider.
Yeah, yeah.
When stuff got tough. Yeah, and you see it at work. You see it in meetings where somebody who, that was the pattern they learned as kids, and it gets tense in a meeting, and all of a sudden somebody will look at their watch and say, oh, I forgot I have another meeting, or I have a call I have to make. See ya.
Yeah.
You know, and they're out of there. Now, there's this, Richard, this is what's important. It's not good or bad. Once we can observe these patterns, mm-hmm. and we can understand that they got hardwired in us as kids, we can do, we call it the out technique. Out. Observe, understand, and then we can transform them. As I did the research, and, you know, it took, I guess it was the first 5 or 6 years to start pulling this together, and we have an incredible program called Total Leadership Connections that's a 4-session program, and it's been going on now for 12 years. Mm. We're starting our 56th program in a couple of weeks, and it's very interesting because in there, people have the opportunity to connect their own dots about the patterns from when they were kids and how they show up. So, you know, I'm out of here, you know, the avoider, which is not uncommon. And it's also quite common for men, in case you want to know.
Really? No.
Really?
Couldn't
yes,
be.
Really. I'm married to someone like you who is an avoider,
but
or was, used to be.
Right. And I would say that I also used to be, because here's what has happened over the course of my on-the-job education, is that the better I got at what I do, the more confidence that I had, so that then I could sit and withstand those tense meetings and still be able to participate. And before we go to break, I just share with you an incident that happened shortly before we moved from Phoenix to Santa Barbara, where I was called into a meeting because a certain situation had happened in the workplace that I was told I was responsible for. I knew better than that. And if it had been another time, I would have been sitting in the chair with these two supervisors shaking in my boots. But all I could do was everything I could do to hold it together to keep from laughing, because I knew I hadn't done anything wrong. And all I could do is let this guy vent. That's the way I perceived it. So I didn't take it in. And when the meeting was over, I got up and I left. And of course, the situation resolved itself within the next day or so. So I think that when one starts to develop that level of confidence in themselves, then in the case of what we're talking about, like your husband and myself, we aren't going to run away like we used to. We're not going to disappear and say, oh, I got a meeting to go to, or got to take this call. This is real important. We're going to stand and deliver, so to speak.
Beautiful. Very well said. And that's the transformation part of this. So you're on the absolutely the right track with me.
Don't bring it to work. Breaking the family pattern that limit the patterns, plural, that limit success. My guest is the author. Her name is Sylvia LaFerre, and we are going to continue here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Stay right where you are. As we continue talking with Sylvia LaFerre here on Tell Me Your Story, I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we're talking about her latest book, Sylvia. It is the book that is Don't Bring It to Work. And as I shared at the beginning of the program, you know, we do. I mean, we just, you've stated it quite well. We can't help but bring it because it's part of us. So now it's a question, as you, I like the acronym OUT, O-U-T. And what was it? Observe, understand, and transform. Is that
perfect? Yes, you get an A.
Oh.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you so much. My confidence is rising as we talk. I've often said this show is kind of like therapy for me, so it's working really well. So tell me, you have several other books that you have out, and I know some programs as well. For example, the Pattern Awareness Success Guide. Tell us a little bit about that. Because this works so well together, obviously.
It's a hand in a glove. Reading Don't Bring It to Work, you really get an overview and you get an understanding of what's needed. And we do that in our four-session program. You know, people have a chance to really go deeply in that. And, you know, not everybody can have the luxury of coming to Pennsylvania to do the program. So the Pattern Aware Success Guide is a three-month do something every day for 3 months, and it's usually 5 minutes. You read it in the morning, kind of lock it into your brain, and it takes about 3 months for patterns to really loosen their hold on you. What I say is once you can observe the pattern, it begins to untie the knot. And you'll love this, Richard. For me, the knot is am not, cannot, should not, not good enough, and not like me. Those are the knots we want to untie.
And we can roll that all into not playing the victim anymore.
Ah, perfect. Yes, thank you so much. That's exactly right. And then we go to understand where these come from, and that loosens them even more. And then a little heavy lifting, we can transform them. So for the first month of the Pattern Aware Success Guide, you're working with observation. The second month, you're working with understanding. And the third month, you're working to transform the patterns. And all the research I've seen says if you really stay with it, in about 3 months, a pattern can begin to really shift itself.
Now, I remember, I don't know if I read this or this was shared in one of the programs that we were doing, but I remember hearing that it took, in terms of patterns, if you were going to change a pattern in your life, and of course we're talking a little bit broader here, the patterns from the family dynamic, 30 days. If you repeatedly did something for 30 days, for example, if you wanted to lose weight or whatever it was, and you did it religiously, if you will, for 30 days, that it would become ingrained in you. You're talking about something a little bit more involved here that's going to take you basically 12 weeks.
Yeah, what I'm saying, you know, a lot of the rehab facilities were based on 30 days.
So that is basically an update.
What we've seen is, truthfully, it's really not enough time. We're too complex for that. You know, maybe if you're 12, you can do the pattern in 30 days. But, you know, when you're 30, I'm not so sure, or 40 or 50.
Yeah.
But let me put this in because I think it's important for your listeners to hear this. There are times at work we can behave in a very mature, methodical, appropriate manner. It's when stress hits the hot button. That's the key to what I'm talking about. When we get overstressed, we automatically will click in to the old patterns that were there to protect us because we need to be protected. So, you know, can we be stress-free or have minimal stress all the time so we can behave very appropriately? Well, not in the way the world is set up today. It's pretty stress-heavy. So what I say to people is, if your boss is behaving like a baby, he or she is, and if you're like a thumb-sucking toddler, look in the mirror. Mm-hmm. That's when the stress comes in, is when these patterns really kick in. And then what you have to do is observe them, understand them, and if you do the 3 months of really, really working to untie the knots to transform them, they're still going to happen, but you can observe, understand, and then do the work of transforming in minutes rather than days or weeks.
Wow. You know, it used to be that I would say to you maybe a year ago, I would say, you know, Sylvia, I don't have the discipline. I really don't, okay, to do this kind of thing for 30 days, let alone 3 months. And then something rather profound. It seemed awfully simple now, but back then it was rather profound. I realized that I was lying because I had the discipline to get up every morning for 5 days a week, week after week, to get myself ready to go to work, brush my teeth, shower, shave, et cetera, drive down, go to work. And so, in other words, I was already disciplined to do those things. And yet I would sit here and go say, I don't have the discipline, Sylvia, to make those kinds of changes in my life.
Well, that's perfect. You just gave everybody an opportunity to say, I can do it.
Yeah.
And what I did with the Pattern Aware Success Guide is I made it really easy. You know, in the morning, think about something and then kind of connect the dots through the day. And I have to tell you, when this understanding of these patterns showed up, here's what happened. There was a day, and I was a consultant, and I had gone into a meeting in the morning, and something was really upsetting, and the stress was terrible in the room, and I got upset, and I, you know, kind of put my hand down on the desk harder than necessary, and I said, this is ridiculous. And I heard somebody on the side say, oh, when she gets dramatic like that, it's just impossible. So I left the meeting, and I said to myself, what do they know? Anyway, later in the day, I go to another meeting, and different group, different situation, another stressor came up, and I knew not to put my hand down on the desk too hard, but I had my arms in the air kind of flailing. I said, oh, we can't keep this up. Somebody looked at me and said, oh, Sylvia, stop the drama. Anyway, I knew these groups pretty well. This is years ago, but nonetheless, that's twice, right?
Yeah.
Three times is the charm. So that evening, I have two daughters, and they were both in college at the time. And I was talking to one of my daughters, and she was telling me something that was really upsetting. And I said, Julie, that is so ridiculous, blah, blah, blah. To Mom, when you do the drama thing, nobody can talk to you. So how about if we hang up and I talk to you another day? And we hung up. And I sat looking at that phone, and I thought, okay, connect the dots, pay attention. I better own it. Well, so I observed it.
Mm-hmm.
And as the younger of two kids, when I wanted to get attention, I threw a hissy fit. I became a master hissy fit thrower. And that's what was happening.
Yeah.
It was unconscious. It was knee-jerk. When stress came in, if I wanted my way, I had a fit. And then I had to do the hard work of transforming it. So let me tell you the good news. A drama queen or king, and there are plenty of drama kings out there, become good storytellers. And that's where I put my energy in becoming a good storyteller, because what I got was I get the same amount of adrenaline, which is, you know, it's addictive.
Yeah.
Being a drama queen or king is very addictive. So I get the same amount of adrenaline going, except it has purpose.
Huh.
Yeah. So that's the trend. And everyone, what I came up with Richard was 13 of the most common patterns from our families that we learned that are in the workplace. So there are plenty of drama queens and kings. That's one of them. Another one you and I just talked about is the avoider. And they become good initiators. And that's what you said. You learned how to stay there and not have to leave. And that's the transformation.
I think in the process of avoiding, for me, it allowed me to go off and do my own thing to develop the confidence that I have today.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would have to say, too, that maybe also the aspect of even, you know, when we go through, and again, I know we're talking about workplaces here, but at the same time, we can expand that to other aspects of our lives when we're no longer in that family dynamic directly, like as a child growing up, been through a divorce.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I look at that and say, you know, I stayed 5 years longer than I should have. But at that 5 year mark, at the beginning of that 5 year mark, I was saying, look, I'm an intelligent guy. I can figure out a way to make this work.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't matter. My intelligence had nothing to do with it. It
right.
wasn't. It just wasn't going to work. But I hung in there another that additional 5 years, trying not to avoid, trying to find a way to, instead of saying, you know what, it's time to end. It just is. It's okay that it's time to end because nothing lasts forever, in spite of what vows you may have said, till death do us part.
Well, I think what you're saying that's perfect is that these same behaviors go into our personal relationships and our adult family relationships. So I'll tell you how it worked for me with my husband. We work together, and it's for me also, it's a second marriage. And we were working on these patterns, and the avoider in him met the drama queen in me, and it was like Saturday Night Live. Because I would start, you know, doing my I can't believe this hissy fit, and he'd get the car keys, and man, he's out the door, you know?
Yeah.
And then we could keep it going for a couple of days because it never got resolved. So as we started working with these patterns, one day I was doing my hissy fit, and I was waiting for him to leave, and he looked at me, and he said, sit down. I said, why? So you think you can get out of here faster? And he said, no. He said, I'm going to sit down too. And I said, why? He said, because what we're working with is the avoider becomes an initiator. That doesn't mean staying in something if it's not working, but it means willing to discuss the situation and see what will come of it. So I looked at him, and I was really, I have to tell you, annoyed. He sat down. He was very calm. He said, all right, we're going to sit here, and we're going to discuss this until we resolve it. And I couldn't have a hissy fit. I couldn't do my drama. So I felt almost like a balloon that had all the air taken out. It took us under 5 minutes to resolve the issue. Hmm. And we looked at each other and said, okay, the transformation of these patterns is really powerful.
Yeah.
And so we took all 13, and, you know, we just talked about the avoider becomes an initiator, the drama queen or king becomes a good storyteller, the super achiever, the one who has to be first and best, the me guy or gal,
mm-hmm.
becomes a good creative collaborator. They begin to see that, you know, it takes a group to make things work, not just an individual, you know, pounding their chest and saying how wonderful they are.
Well, I would have to say that in my second marriage, I actually did go back a little bit to playing the avoider when it would get tough. I'd leave the room. I would leave the house, start heading down the road or what have you. But it was really when I began not so much to see the pattern as much as it was to realize that, you know, this really isn't showing a great deal of love and concern and compassion for what she's going through. You need to stay there and you need to work this out because this is something that is very important for you to stay focused on. You're listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we are talking right now with my very special guest just because, hey, she is who she is, and she's been doing a bang-up job here on the program providing us with information from her new work, which is entitled Do Not or Don't, I should to uncontract those. Don't bring it to work. Breaking the family patterns that limit success. Sylvia LaFaire, I beg your pardon. Sylvia LaFaire is my guest, and we're talking about these patterns. And I wanted to go into a little different direction, if we might, here, Sylvia, along the same lines, but maybe diverting ever so slightly. I understand about recognizing the patterns in me. And going through the process of observing, understanding, and transforming. But what about when I go to work and I'm doing the out, okay, but I still have these people around me that just won't shut up.
Perfect.
Just will not. I can't get away from them because they're in the cubicle right next to me or right behind me or what have you. And you know, if I could, I would. If they would give me an office of my own, I would take it in a heartbeat, so that I didn't have to be bombarded by all of this negativity, all of this stuff that, you know. So, what do I do?
Well, it's a perfect question, and what we teach is how to talk to the pattern, the person with the pattern, so that one of the things that will happen is that you can help them. Now, sometimes they'll get it, and sometimes they won't, but you're doing your part. So you want to talk about that now?
Yes.
How you talk to the
absolutely, please.
Okay, perfect. So let's start with the drama queen, or the super achiever.
Okay.
Okay, one of the things is what they do is they diminish trust in the workplace. But they're good at what they do. Now, the first thing you have to do is acknowledge that they're good, because that's what their need is. If they don't hear you tell them they're doing a good job, they can't hear anything else. So the first thing you say to them is, you know, you're really talented, you do a good job, and not but would you consider looking at the fact that if you don't give room for other people to be included and you're always proving how good you are, that we can have a team approach to this. And maybe it would be good for you to look at where that came from. You don't go into it. You're not there to analyze them or to change them. You're there to be a mirror for them so they can see it.
But there's no guarantee that they will.
There's no guarantee, but I will tell you, in all the years I've done this, that more people say, oh, I can't say anything. I shouldn't say anything. And what I'm saying is say something, because I would say 70% of the time you can affect change. Sometimes you can't, mm-hmm. But without even giving it a shot, you'll never know.
We often say on this program that the myth, and I call it a myth now, that you cannot change other people is a myth, because you can. By changing yourself, you automatically change the dynamic. You've at least changed one of the variables, and now the others are going to have to adjust. They're either going to make the transformation, as we're talking, or they're going to get away from you because they want nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Now, if I've spent time in the workplace and I've just kind of gritted my teeth and just kind of gone through it, but now it's starting to manifest in my body, now the stress is starting to build up. I'm having headaches and muscle tension and all of this kind of stuff. And now I'm going to the doctor and I'm getting pills and I'm getting treatments and all of this stuff that I never had before. I want to release all of this stuff, but the dynamic in the workplace is still the same. And this is still going back to the same issue, being the mirror for these other people. And again, this isn't a situation. Let's try one of the other dynamics, if we might, or one of the other patterns. This has to do with a constant complainer, someone who just can't find anything good to say about anything or anyone at the workplace or anywhere else for that matter. They're just... Can I use the phrase, they're a negative Nelly?
Uh-huh. Yeah, and they're usually victims, you know, they or martyrs. They're the kind of people,
yes,
who won't own any of their part in this. And so one of the things to do when you have someone like that is basically to say to them, you know, you may be right. You have to give room to begin to acknowledge before anybody will listen to you about anything, okay? Then the next thing is to say, and listening to the complaining is very hard on me and probably the rest of our colleagues here. When you come without solutions, and that's the key, people just shut it down and they shut you off. So with victims, what we say is come with, and I say three solutions. The victims become explorers. And, you know, a lot of times we can't see in ourselves that, you know, we're annoying people. We really don't see it, and nobody will tell us, so we just stay stuck. So it gets really kind of uncomfortable. So I think the whole idea here is basically telling somebody you really have some good possibilities and here's the place where you can do some work. And then you have to let it go. You really have to let it go. You can't resolve everything for everybody.
Mm. Well, you know, and of course that can be a bit frustrating because you want to work in a place that's positive, that's supportive, that's encouraging, all of those wonderful things. And it seems as though, I was lucky, as I said earlier in the program about the one workplace, they just, with open arms, just took me in. It was like I was that lost child they finally found, you know. I was very fortunate in that respect, but not everybody is that lucky. And, you know, I think, too, that it takes what you put out is what you get back. Is that kind of what you're saying as well?
Well, I'm saying we have to take risks. And if you're in a leadership position, you're in an incredibly positive position. What we've done with our leadership program, and I've watched it in the organizations, and we've worked with Fortune 100 companies with this, and we work with startups with this. People really aren't that different. It doesn't matter what they're doing. They're still people. There are two things that I know people want. They want to be heard, and they want to be acknowledged. So what I'm doing is giving them clues. And the first one is, before you tell somebody that they're a pain in the you-know-what, you really need to acknowledge something about them that works. There's always something. Nobody is all negative or all positive. That's kind of baloney. And when we can start in the workplace to tell the truth to each other, I'm going to give you an example, Richard, that's mm-hmm. really powerful. I was working with a sales team, and they were doing best practices. And we had worked with them for maybe 6 months, so they knew about patterns. And they were learning to tell the truth to each other and to themselves. So some guy was standing up, and we were in a conference room, and he was talking about he was the super achiever, me guy, mm-hmm. about all the wonderful things he was doing. And I looked around the room, and people's bodies were sitting there, but their minds were gone. They were buying new cars or cooking dinner or, you know, getting to their kids' soccer game, whatever it was. And I was waiting. Nobody was ready to do this yet. And I was leading the program, but, you know, they modeled me from this. So I looked at this guy, and I said, stop. And everybody came back in the room. They stopped buying cars and cooking dinner, and, you know, they were attending. And the guy looked at me, and all I said, and this is a really important takeaway for your listeners, is I said, what is your intention? And the room got very quiet, and he got very quiet. Now, they had done enough work at that point that he looked around the room, and he said, I was simply grandstanding, and I apologize. And he sat down. And so I did what any good facilitator does at those moments. I said, why don't we just take a break? So we did. And what I did is I watched, and he went out. There was like a little patio where we were. He went out. I think he was pretty embarrassed. But about half the group of 30 followed him and shook his hand and stood there talking with him. And we came back after the break and did not sit and discuss it. This is not therapy. It's really helping people grow to their next level, and you can do it without a whole bunch of talk about it. And we just said, okay, let's move on. And the rest of the day, because he had told the truth, he simply said, I was grandstanding and I apologize. When he told that truth, it shifted the entire room, and the amount of work that got done and the creativity for the rest of that day was stunning. So, you know, we can make differences, and it does mean learning how to tell the truth, and it doesn't mean slamming people and hurting people and talking about them behind their back and playing the gotcha game. Telling the truth is a very high art form, and once you can observe yourself and understand yourself and begin your own ability to change your patterns, you can then start to tell the truth to others. And that's in the Pattern Aware Success Guide and in Don't Bring It to Work, which I'm going to take some bragging rights, has won 9 book awards so far.
Well, you wrote it. You ought to take bragging rights.
Well, I just did. If, there you go.
If I've heard it said that if you don't toot your own horn, No one else is going to.
Well, there you go.
So yeah. Congratulations on the
Thank
awards.
You.
It's something, too, that that I find so interesting. And a matter of fact, I'm sitting here looking at a few of the patterns that you can find in this particular work, which is called Don't Bring It to Work. And we're going to talk more about the breaking of the family patterns that basically limit success. And some of these patterns go by a lot of different names, but in this case, let me see if I can't... We have the drama queen or king, which we've talked about. The martyr, we've also talked about. Then there's the pleaser, the avoider, the denier, the splitter. Now, we go back to what you said at the beginning of the program, Sylvia, mm-hmm. or earlier. None of these are necessarily wrong. They're just patterns.
Mm-hmm.
So really one of the first steps is when you see yours come up on the list... It's okay because it's just a pattern, and all you're doing is you're working to observe it, and then we go through the various steps in terms of what we've talked about. I think the victim is one that is huge for a lot of people because they've never really been in a situation where they haven't been, where it's, and again, it can be for a lot of reasons, you know, again, going back to the family dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's one of the things too, that I mean, like I said, when you mentioned, you know, when we started talking about this in terms of the family patterns, I thought, wow, I never put it together in that way before. And yet I've been through personal growth and development. I went through LifeSpring back in the 80s,
uh-huh.
into the 90s. And that's all we talked about was what happened in our childhood and in our young adult years with our families. And it's, I went to see a movie, and I should have checked the title out a little bit better, because had I done that with my intellect, I should have known better than to have gone to see this movie, because I didn't care for that style of movie. It wasn't terrible. I mean, you know, it was an interesting movie, and I liked the actor that was in it. I enjoy watching him. But nonetheless, it's like sometimes we don't see the forest for the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's right there in front of us.
You're saying what I need to have somebody say. Yes, 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 yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
Great.
So how has, I want to get into some other areas too, but how has your workplace, you're not all sitting around singing Kumbaya, holding hands and eating s'mores all the time and getting the work done. We have a philosophy here at this radio station where, it's a very simple philosophy. It's very easy to remember. You don't have to write it down. We're here to serve. End of story.
Beautiful.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
And so when someone comes to us and says, hey, can you do this? We never say no. Now, that doesn't mean we can do everything. It just means give me a little time to think about that. Let me see what I can do.
Well, you know, it's very interesting that, and I'll talk a little bit about my own workplace, because we have decided if we can't do what is written about, then we're not worth it. So the funny story is, I work with somebody named Mary Jane, who I've worked with now for almost 10 years, and we've kind of gone through the etiology of all of this. She grew up in South Carolina, and she was very much a sweet Southern gal who would say yes to everything. And a lot of women have that tendency. The pleaser is there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, this is now years ago, but I whatever I would ask her, she would say sure, and she would do. And she's great. She's very effective. And one day I said, you know, here's a project, and will you take this? And she looked at me, and she said, no. And I went, excuse me? I don't know that word. She said, look, Sylvia, I can't. And I said, but I can't do it either. She said, well, we're going to have to figure it out. I can't put it on my plate. And I said, but Mary Jane, you never say that. And she said, well, I'm not a pleaser anymore, because the pleaser transformed becomes a very elegant truth teller.
Oh, yeah.
And so what we teach is that no is a complete sentence. You don't have to defend, explain, or justify. You just have to say it.
Right.
And we've laughed about that since, because, you know, she will say no very quickly now, and mm-hmm. it's changed her life, both at work mm-hmm. and also at home.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'll even admit that there have been some people that have come in we haven't been able to help, but it's not something that we just make the snap decision saying, no, because we don't want to do it.
Right.
You know, because we'd like to try to work with everybody that we can. But I think that that what you're saying, I think, is really appropriate. Before we wrap up this segment of the program, I want to let our listeners know that we're going to have what I like to call the after view. It is a continuation of this conversation with Sylvia LaFaire and her book, Don't Bring It to Work. And it's dealing with these wonderful 13 patterns, breaking the family patterns that limit success. And I want to thank you right now, Sylvia, before we wrap up the radio broadcast, for joining us on the program, as well as for staying with us for an extra few minutes after the broadcast that will be heard on the program that will be broadcast on A2Zen.fm, but it'll also be part of the archive. So if you wanted to listen to A to Zen tomorrow or Sunday at 3 p.m., you can do that, and that's Pacific time, or you can go to the website and you can listen to the entire interview from front to back. Plus a segment that Sylvia and I recorded actually during the wonderful little astronomical and astrological segment that I had previously recorded with Beth McDonald. So we got a lot of information for you on this program, more than what you've heard on the radio broadcast. And Sylvia, again, I want to thank you so much for sharing your time and your story and your book with us here on the program.
Oh, my pleasure.
And I should let people know, too, that you have more than just these two books. You've written many articles. You've got several chapters, a chapter in several other books. You have Gutsy, which is How Women Leaders Make Change. You've contributed to Ready, Aim, Excel, as well as Working Together. And you've also put together a Conflict at Work DVD, which I think is something that maybe we will talk a little bit about in our afterview, if we can do that.
Sure.
All right. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And it's always a pleasure to come your way each Saturday at this time, as we do, or Sunday if you're listening, or whatever day you're listening to the archive, as we bring you these broadcasts and try to give you ideas and concepts that you may not have thought of before. They've been out there, but you just didn't know they were there. And we're trying to bring them to you as many as we can, as quickly as we can, to expand that smorgasbord the table's huge, folks. I went out and I spared no expense, and I bought the largest imaginary table that I could find. And we just keep loading up the table. And you take just whatever you want. It's all there, and nobody wants everything. I mean, you know, nobody wants all of the same thing. So there's more than enough to go around, and we encourage you to check it out. Again, the website for Sylvia LaFaire is just that, sylvialafaire.com. That's sylvialafaire.com. I'm Richard Dugan for Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices. Until next Saturday. Love, Talal. And we continue talking with Sylvia here on the program. When we left you, Sylvia, I had mentioned about this wonderful little DVD that you have, and I just liked the title, Conflict at Work. And I know this isn't just showing conflict. This is how to deal with it, how to work through it so that it's makes a better work environment. And I think that probably most of us, Sylvia, probably would be able to say, yeah, at one time in my career or in my work history, yeah, I worked in a really awful place. And boy, it was nothing but conflict. There was just always arguing or this or that or the other. Where do you start when you have parties that have such emotional grievances that it seems as though you're going to have to bring the labor unions in to try to work out the problem?
Well, you know, I do believe water rolls downhill. And if you have a good boss, or if you are one, you can begin the process that says it will stop now and it will stop with me. And we have had people who have taken the Don't Bring It to Work book and done lunchtime reading with it so that they can get an understanding. And before I forget, I want to say you can go on the SylviaLaFaire.com website, and there's a free pattern aware quiz that you can take to see which patterns, if you're not sure, or even if you are, you can look at it, which patterns have your name on it. You know, I can make a case for all 13 patterns for everybody, but there are two or three that I would call sticky that, you know, are more who we are.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, this is just such a funny story. So some woman apparently took the quiz, and she called, and my colleague Mary Jane answered the phone, and she said, I don't believe in what you're doing, and this is ridiculous, and, you know, what I came up with a pattern doesn't work for me. So Mary Jane said, well, what was the pattern? And she said, the avoider. And Mary Jane said, well, how long ago did you take the quiz? She said, 3 months ago. I just wasn't ready to talk. Hello.
Well, and we even, that kind of point comes up every so often when people are listening to this program. At the end of the broadcast, you know, they may say, yeah, it was a bunch of hooey. Okay, and that's fine. We have no problem with that. You know, we excel in hooey on this program. Mm. But the point is that you've heard it. And you may not care to talk about it or deal with it or delve into it or go to that table, the smorgasbord table, and try some of that today. But maybe next week or next month or next year. And it's okay. I love to use the analogy of chocolate cake, Sylvia, when it comes to especially individuals who have been rejected in whatever circumstance, whether it be in the workplace, by a workplace, in relationship and so forth, you are that chocolate cake and you're sitting there and you are perfect. And somebody comes along and looks at the chocolate cake and says, no, I don't want any. Does that make the chocolate cake bad? Well, of course not. It's just saying that individual or that company just isn't interested today. They might be tomorrow.
Well, I love the way you put that. And, you know, my feeling is that we all are in work situations so we can grow. And what I say to people, if you're not happy where you are, or even if you are, and you say to yourself, why am I here? Look down at your feet. You're there because that's where you're meant to be at that moment. And people will say, oh, that's a bunch of hooey. It really isn't. We are where we are so we can take each situation. I remember one gal who worked in a company, and it was mostly at the top level men, and she was always complaining. And I said, so tell me why you stay here. Why don't you go to a woman-owned business? No, she couldn't. And finally, I did. I'm careful about this, but I said, tell me about what it was like when you were growing up. Oh, my father was the biggest bully, and I said, do you talk to him now? No, why would I talk to him? I said, well, do you talk to your boss? No, why would I talk to him? It was like, start connecting the dots and begin to see how you can make changes or stay miserable. You know, that's another choice. But, you know, this is what somebody told me, Richard. I think it's so funny. This is a mother, and she was calling up to her daughter saying, hurry up or you're going to be late for school. And the daughter yelled down, I don't want to go. Nobody likes me, and they talk about me behind my back. And the mother yelled up, oh, that's so old. And besides, now you're the principal.
Ouch.
Ouch. So patterns will follow us if we don't take care of them.
Indeed they will. Indeed they will. You know, when you mentioned about looking down at your feet, it brought to mind an experience I had in one of these personal growth programs. And we were all sitting there. I think this was the first night. It was three nights and a weekend experience. And the facilitator basically said, if any of you are feeling as though you don't want to be here, you're wrong. And the reason is because if you didn't want to be here, you wouldn't be here. But you are here, so you must want to be here. Mm-hmm. Now, I realize that seems like circular logic. but it's rather inescapable. And this actually takes me to another interesting element here. You know that back around 2008, when the U.S. economy started to experience some tremors, if you will, I'll put it gently, a lot of people lost their jobs. Mm-hmm. Now, from a metaphysical standpoint, Sylvia, my observation, and of course it was easy for me to say because I didn't lose mine, I'll bet you most of the people, 99% of those people who lost their jobs hated their jobs. They didn't want to be there anyway.
It'd be great if we could do some research on that. That's brilliant. Mm-hmm.
And if that's the if that were to be the case, then these people now had an opportunity to pursue anything they wanted. Hey, just because your dad and your granddad and your great-granddad were coal miners, does that really mean you have to be a coal miner or a car dealer or an accountant or whatever the occupation is? Well, of course not. And what was it I heard just the other day, a saying that, and this was actually something that I think it was one of our early presidents said, or at least one of the founding fathers of the U.S., that what I do, I do so that my son can be, and then his father and his father, and the last person down on the line, which was maybe four or five generations, so that his great-great-grandson can be can live his purpose. So in other words, there was sort of a progression where I have to do what I'm doing as part of my legacy so that my son will then take the next step up on that hierarchical ladder and so on and so forth until civilization maybe reaches a point where now we're starting to live our purpose. We're starting to do what we really were put here to do and not what family says we're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts?
I think that what you said was elegant, and I think that's a way of looking at things from a larger perspective so we don't get trapped in the selfishness or the me place or, you know, the depression of what we're doing. We see it from a bigger place. I love it.
So when you first started thinking about these family patterns, we talked about this earlier in the broadcast, and of course it was a cumulative process. I mean, it wasn't instant. You took several years to put it all together, and now we have these 13 patterns. I'm actually going to go through them real quickly for our listeners. You have the superachiever, the rebel, the procrastinator, the clown, the persecutor, and then there's the victim. They kind of go hand in hand. The rescuer, drama queen or king, martyr, pleaser, avoider, denier, and splitter. So you have these, but this isn't all there is. I mean, these are just the ones that you have kind of culled down into these 13 patterns that you've been able to find.
Well, there are certainly more than that. When I was writing the book, the publisher, somebody from the publisher called and said, people don't like big numbers. Can you make it 4 or 5? So I kept looking to the common denominator, but I couldn't. Yeah, I must have had 25 at that point, and I took it down to 13, and that was, I couldn't get it down more than that because I felt each of these was slightly different. You know, the avoider is very different than the denier. The denier says there is no problem. The avoider sees the problem and says, I'm out of here. But the denier just says, huh, what? You know, that was the old the guy who was on the Titanic saying, what iceberg?
You know? iceberg. I was actually trying to come up with some kind of an acronym, but I don't know of a word that's 13 letters long that only has one vowel in it. So we'll just leave that to somebody else to try to program into a phone or something.
Yeah.
This, to me, it's I think it's extremely important. And obviously you do, because not only have you written the book, but your career, your company, your life's work is around helping the workplace, if I can be overly redundant with the word, to work.
Well, here's what I have found. You know, I came from many years of being a therapist, sitting with individuals and couples and families and working through things, but I didn't see the translation into the workplace. They come in and complain about work, and I saw it, But what I'm seeing now is when people get to understand what's going on at work and they begin to see how the system, it's all about how the system operates. We're all connected and we're all involved and we all have a part. And you said it earlier, Richard, you said if one person starts to change, then many things can begin to change. What I've seen is people will take it home. And I knew it one day when I got a call from somebody who, she called and she said, I'm so-and-so's wife and my husband is in your leadership program. So I did an automatic, is everything okay? And she said, yes. I said, well, you know, can I help you? She said, well, I'm just calling to say thank you. I said, for what? She said, I don't know. She said, I just know that the kids and I think he's more considerate, he listens better, and things are more relaxed at home. So I started looking, and I'm not a statistician, that's not my area of expertise, but I saw more and more people would come in saying they now saw at home how they played their role or what needed to be changed or what was there, than the reverse. So I made the decision that working in the workplace, and people will listen more effectively when they have promotions or to keep their job. It was very different than having an annoyed wife drag a husband into therapy. I was good at what I did, but it still seemed to take longer to get them settled down. Here, people move more quickly.
Hmm. Well, I'm just really thrilled that we've had the opportunity to talk with you today, and I have only a couple more questions for you, actually three. Number one, who is Sylvia LaFaire?
Who is Sylvia LaFaire? That is a very good question. I need another hour for that. Yeah, I'm just a soul searching for truth and to find my purpose and to do what I can to help.
And what is it, though we've obviously discussed this throughout the broadcast, what is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
Helping more people be aware that conflict, while it will never go away, can be handled more quickly. My whole thing is being smarter and faster because that's the way the world is going. And we get trapped with conflict. And if we can begin to see that there are ways to talk to each other and help each other and learn about each other so that we can see each other differently, we can get conflict resolved much more quickly. It won't ever go away, ever, ever, ever. It's mm-hmm. just part of the nature of life. But there's a word in science I love. It's the word elegant. And in science, the word elegant means to get to the most effective endpoint the quickest, easiest way possible. So to be more elegant in our conversations and in our communications.
And finally, how powerful are we as human beings?
Oh, I think we are so unaware of the power we have, but we have to clear out those knots. That's what keeps the power from being there. You know, I've had the privilege of not only walking on fire, but also karate chopping a piece of wood into half and hiking the Inca Trail into Peru and bungee jumping in New Zealand and doing all kinds of things. And what I see is we are amazingly wonderful people. We just have to untie the knots.
And those knots show up in many different ways, especially in our bodies, through that thing we call stress. Mm-hmm. And to let that go, is so vital. There are so many ways to do it, too, especially as you begin that process, as Sylvia has shared with us, of identifying with any one of, and hopefully not all of, but I would venture that each one of us could probably see a little bit of every one of the 13 patterns in our lives, especially in our family dynamics, somewhere along the way. May not have been a dominant part, but I would venture you probably have done that. You say, yeah, well, I've seen that in my life.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Sylvia, I want to thank you again for joining us. And a reminder to our listeners, SylviaLaFaire.com is the website. Don't Bring It to Work is the name of the book, subtitle, Breaking the Family Patterns That Limit Success. And I guess I'm gonna actually ask you one final question. From your perspective, what is success?
Finding out for ourselves what love really means and being able to shine that light into the world. And it's not about all the stuff we've been trained to think is success. It's finding that loving nature and expressing it to everybody we find. And that's not soft and mushy. It's the hardest thing we have to do.
I hear you. Sylvia, again, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next Saturday at this same time, love, Talal.